Our final speaker for this session is Sue McCluskey. Sue is the Chief Executive Officer for the Council of Rural Research and Development Corporations. And I think she's talking today, she's talking today about the future for rural and medium Australia, but I think it's quite pertinent in terms of the last couple of slides that Lindsay had about what some of the research needs are for the future. So I'll hand over to Sue.
Thanks, Paula, and I'm very pleased to be here. And I think it's not just the last presentation that I'll be able to draw on as I go through my presentation, but I'll be able to pull on the themes of the last three speakers. Although I do like that photograph from the last presentation, but the only thing I could think of was mine's bigger than yours. Okay, I'm actually going to do this presentation in the context of two hats. First, my current role, which is the CEO of the Council of Rural Research and Development Corporations, but in another month I'm going to be moving to the Regional Australia Institute. So I'm going to be looking at both of those roles, both from a background, the challenges and the solutions, and where we're looking to take the agenda to next. So first of all, from the Council of RDC's perspective, the Council itself doesn't actually invest. We do our work through the RDCs, but our role really is to facilitate collaboration and co-investment across those RDCs themselves. So it's to be able to leverage better investment, it's to be able to get more efficient and effective investment. But in essence, what we're trying to do is make sure that the stakeholders, and that's both industry and government, get bang for their buck. So that's our role as the Council, and we do work closely with the RDCs. As you'd be aware, particularly here in Narrabri, that you've got the Cotton RDC. There are another 14 RDCs that go across a whole range of different industries, pork, sugar, fish. They are dispersed in a lot of areas around Australia, and their key role really is to invest in RD&E. And I do add the E there because, of course, extension and adoption is a very important component of the investments that the RDCs make. They make almost $500 million of investments in rural RD&E, so it's actually a very important investment factor in terms of the amount of money that's been put into this area. When we look at the challenges for investment and performance, it would be no surprise to you, and of course there was a question earlier about the level of investment in R&D, and we know that it has been slowing. We know productivity growth has been slowing, and unfortunately, if we don't continue to get increased investment, both public and private, in this area, we will see productivity growth continue to slow. Agriculture has been a significant contributor to productivity growth in this country, and we do need to make sure that we can actually find ways to actually secure more investment. As I said, the government does invest in this area, but we have to look at innovative ways to get the private sector to also provide funding, either through the tax system or through other incentives. The government does provide a dollar for dollar through the RDCs, and that is actually under ongoing scrutiny. So many of you would be aware that we had a recent Productivity Commission inquiry into the RDCs, and one of the recommendations of the Productivity Commission was to cut the government funding by 50%. Now, fortunately, the government rejected that proposal, but that doesn't mean that, certainly at the Australian government level, and particularly from Treasury and Finance, that the funding in this area will not continue to be under scrutiny. Yes, it is protected to a certain level by the legislation that actually set up the RDC model, but this area will continue to be questioned, and we will need to make sure that we do demonstrate value for money for the investors. How do we go then about improving the system? From an RDC perspective, we really are looking at increasing the coordination and collaboration. One of the challenges that the 15 RDCs get is that there's 15 of you. You know, surely you can do more in terms of sharing your resources, sharing your services, and there's some of the areas that we've explored. But it's not just across the RDCs, it's really across the whole RD&E community and across government. You know, if we look at the money that's been put into climate change, it's not just coming from the Climate Change Department, it's coming from the Agriculture Department. There's also the environment that's all involved in these issues. And, you know, if we go back a number of years, a lot of that was actually located within the Agriculture Department itself. but it's now actually been devolved into other departments, and so we really do need to make sure that we work across all those areas. So we're speaking the same language and we're actually making sure that we're connecting. I think, as the Minister said earlier, joining the dots. We also need to make sure that we communicate what we're doing to industry, government and the general community. No surprise to any of you, the RDCs, of course, some of them were in the spotlight last year when we started to see animal welfare issues come to the fore. And that sort of community involvement in the work that the RDCs do can actually tend to divert our efforts from where we need to focus our efforts in R&D. But we do need to be mindful about what the community thinks, and that will start to influence some of the directions that we need to look at in terms of the R&D. Efficiency and effectiveness, of course, in investments is what I talked about in terms of the sharing of services and how we actually share knowledge as well. The ability for the RDCs to come together and be able to share systems, to be able to share, at the moment we're working on standard contracts so that it makes it a lot easier to be able to negotiate research agreements with universities and other research providers. Those all add to the efficiency and effectiveness that we can look at. And also better information and coordinated funding. You know, certainly co-investment is one area that we are keen to look at, particularly in cross-sectoral areas. And that takes me to one of the key initiatives that we look at for investment, not just in industry sector areas, but in cross-sectoral areas. And that's the National Primary Industries RD&E framework. This is a national framework that involves partners that are all the RDCs. It's got the Australian government, it's got the state jurisdictions, the CSIRO and the universities. So a truly national, cross-sectoral, cross-portfolio, cross-jurisdictional framework that really is trying to drive investment across 14 industry areas, but also across 8 cross-sectoral strategies. Those cross-sectoral strategies are challenging because you haven't got ownership. So really what we're trying to do through the council is to try and take leadership to get ownership around those strategies, and they include strategies such as water, use in agriculture, soils, climate change, food and nutrition among others, so that we can really get some really valuable R&D being undertaken in those areas. The benefits, of course, of having a framework like this is that you do get great collaboration, you do get sharing of knowledge, you do get combined effort. We're seeing much more innovative funding models being developed under this, and we're also seeing greater leverage coming from the investments. And I actually see that this sort of framework is what's very relevant to my new role. So in terms of the Regional Australia Institute, I see that where the National Primary Industries RD&E framework has been a great national framework for the rural sector, that really what we're looking to do with the new RAI is to have a national framework that looks across regional Australia. The important thing about this new institute is that it's an independent policy think tank, as well as being a research institute that's devoted to issues that impact on regional Australia. We're looking to aim to identify the solutions that really can enhance economic prosperity. So it's about empowering people in regional Australia, and we want to actually get debate and be able to provide input into the national issues at the policy level. The challenges, of course, really are how do we get the best brains to find those sort of solutions to the problems that we already know exist. Having to get that increased power in national debates has been a challenge in the past, and this is something that we do see as an area we can really influence. Of course, some of the work that we've seen, that we've already seen the research work on around job creation and understanding impact on communities will be a factor, and I'll come back to that towards the end when I talk about our research themes and our current research agenda. What we aim to do is to empower and engage regional Australia. And look, it's probably a fair question to say, why do we need the RAI? Haven't we got other organisations that do this? And we do have a lot of other organisations, such as NARA, and we heard Anthony talk about the work that they're doing, that does a lot of work in this area. The role of the RAI is to harness what other organisations are doing, identify if there are gaps, but take that research then and say, how do we actually influence policy to get the sort of changes that will make a difference for regional Australia? And when I thought about it, when I was approached for this role, I made the analogy that related back to some work I did quite a few years ago when I was working in the tax area. And when we were trying to get the GST up and running, we were looking at very technical input. And the real challenge was, how do we engage the business community? And trying to communicate to the business community about the GST. And we were able to do that through our seminar program and our business education program, and we were able to get a change that meant the business community understood it. I mean, I have to say now, I wonder if sometimes we did sell it too well. But that, for me, is what the RAI is trying to do. It's really seeking to empower the people who live in regional Australia to be able to affect the change that we've had input into that policy. We also want to be the authoritative and trusted source of information. Minister Crean earlier today referred to the OECD, and you hear a lot of people refer to OECD reports. We'd like to be the equivalent of the OECD for regional Australia, so that people can say that RAI did this work and we know that we can rely on it. So let's go to our research focus and the areas that we've looked at. And there has been a lot of engagement and community consultation in relation to developing these themes. The first theme is in relation to position and potential. Basically, where are we now and where do we want to get to? And that's where we're going to look at what is the existing work that's been undertaken and do a stock take. We're doing a survey with the RDA so we can get the input from the sort of work that they're doing as well, and that will provide input into this stock take as well. Population mobility, well, of course, we heard about the work that's being done, and we will draw on that and start to look at how that does make a difference in inputting into the policy that exists at the moment. How does it need to be changed? What are the legislative frameworks? How do we need to look at making that difference, and who do we need to influence to make a change in those areas? Realising opportunity. Once again, we've heard about both of these, CSG and fly-in, fly-out workforces, and there's been a lot of work done in the CSG area, a lot of work currently being undertaken. And we actually want to have a look at that and say, can we provide the information to the community that separates fact from fiction? Can we actually be able to demonstrate what has the robustness of the research behind it? And then what else might be anecdotal or people's own individual views that really aren't grounded in significant research or research that is robust. A third theme is in terms of successful transitions. And this was a really interesting area because if we look, for example, at natural disasters, floods, bushfires, we know that there's a lot of help that comes from the community and from governments following a natural disaster. But what does that community look like 12 months, 2 years, 5 years down the track? How have they recovered and what can we learn from that? So once again, that's another project that we've identified within that theme that we can start to work on pretty quickly. And our fourth theme, of course, better services and engagement. And one of the key areas there we want to look at initially is in relation to infrastructure and the infrastructure crisis. And to what extent can we help rural communities and regional communities address those issues? We need to make sure that we have ongoing consultation with regional Australia. What we're planning to do is hold regional forums where we can actually showcase the work we've done, but importantly be able to discuss with regional communities the policy issues, get their input, be able to inform our forward agenda and really discuss with them what they need to support them to be able to take any policy changes and be able to put them into practice. In the end, we're about taking that research and being the bridge between the research, the policy and the change that needs to happen, and then ensuring that that can be implemented in regional areas. We also are looking at the other opportunities to be able to engage researchers and others in that sector by looking at conferences or symposiums, and so certainly the area of consultation will be ongoing and what we're keen to do. So if I go back to the two hats that I was wearing and say we're going from rural to regional, what are the crucial things that really make a difference? First of all, from an RDC perspective, it's crucial that investment in RD&E grows, because we've got to get that productivity growth, we've got to get innovation. We need to be able to contribute to global food security. From the Regional Australia Institute perspective, though, it's crucial that we can actually implement that RD&E, that we can actually inform policy, that we can influence policy. That's the important thing, so that we can assure that we can lead to enhanced prosperity. And where we need to go from here is our vision is to enable the regions to achieve their potential. And as we heard Minister Crean say earlier, that stronger regions equal stronger nations. And that's really what we are about. So through the work that I've been doing currently with the RDCs, but also through the work that I will start doing through the Regional Australia Institute, that's how we'll look to contribute so that we'll be a catalyst to make change for regional Australia, which will ultimately be to the benefit of all Australians. And I'll leave it there and I'll take questions.
As a chair, I love a speaker like Sue, who will keep to time, and we also have some time for questions now as a result. So, Russell, down here first. Yep.
Good morning. Thank you. Sorry, it's afternoon. I feel I've been up for a while. My name is Pastor Arjun and I live in Bolka. I think the umbrella position that you're espousing is excellent. But nowhere have I heard so far how you're going to link up the Regional Australian Institute, obviously, which is a federally government funded. We have three tiers of government in Australia. So how do you propose this way to come the barrier between federal, state and local to achieve those objectives? I hear in the news every day about everybody's, there's so many competing interests out there from all levels of government, and we have changes in government, and I don't envy you that process of patches and enlightenment is a little bit here in a minute.
I'm not going to pretend it's going to be easy, but one thing I should point out is that we are an independent institute, so while we've received seed funding, we really do exist as an independent institute, and when I talked about the framework that we have, the National RD&E framework, that's what I mean about a framework for regional Australia. It needs to be truly national. We do need to make sure that we engage at all three levels of government, and we need to make sure that we continue to engage with the community. So really we need to look at making sure that we break down those barriers by engaging with RDAs, for example, is actually saying that we do need to go out to those communities and be able to engage at the local level. I see that our chairman, Mal Peters, has just joined us, and Mal, as mayor of Inverell, as well as being the chairman of the RDA for Northern Inland, goes across all three levels of government there. And I think that and Mal will talk more about this tonight, when we look at the people we've got on our board, we have been able to draw from people who have experience and have links into people at different levels of government. An important key about influencing is also being able to tap into the people you know, or the ability to open doors so you actually get the ear of those you need to influence. And that is something we will need to continue to work on and never take our mind off that.
So, Russell Stewart, Bush President, and welcome to the Harvard University Memorial. The question I had, I sat here today and I listened to the word research a number of times. I think it's terrific. We need your research. The question I have of when you're researching and putting together data, how many of those that are still living in the bush who already have a number of quality answers and getting results, how do we get through to people in the right places to say, will you take notice and see we've created this on our own and in fact it is working? How do we get through to people? Who do we get to?
I would hope that you would see that the RAI is a mechanism for which you can have a voice that can be heard, because when I talked about doing a stock take but continuing to engage with the community, it's about seeing what's out there now and what's been done, but also how do we continue to look at the richness of the work that is being done in these communities. That said, I would be very open to hear how you believe we need to be able to facilitate that in a timely and effective way, so that we actually can hear what you're doing, we can take that on board, we can put that into and add it to the information we have, and also allow us to disseminate it. One thing we are not going to be is precious about the information that we have. We want to be able to share it. We want other people to be able to use it. We want others to be able to leverage off it. And we want other researchers to be able to say, if they think there's an area they want to research, they can tap into our database and our website and say, we can see that this is the work that's already been done in this area. So if there's gaps, we know where those gaps are. We also will not be a research institute that will necessarily need to undertake to fill all those gaps ourselves. We can actually work with others to partner or empower others to actually say we could undertake research in this area. So I think I've given you some ideas of how I think that we would like to listen, but I would love to hear from you and continue to hear from the community as how can we do it better.
My name is Catherine Kiesa. I'm a member of the Upper House in New South Wales, where I come from North Coast. Just to ask you, how are we going to guard this problem of consultation fatigue? Because some people might say there are too many regional programs, it's very hard for people to navigate. Keeping in account, it seems to be about asking people their opinions, lots of meetings, and then nothing happens. And there will be clear that this is going to be another round of meetings with the councillors and various different ones that have got going. And I guess I just wanted to say, local decision making means devolving the decision to the local community, not asking the community and deciding for the RPOs. And it seems to me a lot of the local decision making that I hear discussed isn't local decision making.
And look, I think you're quite right. If I pick up on the consultation fatigue first, the real issue we have is that if you continue to just go out and ask for people's views, you'll either get the same sort of views come back because people will just churn what they've put forward before, or you'll get the same groups of people because it is very hard to be able to engage. So we've really got to find innovative ways to be able to engage the community so we're actually working with them so we can build on a partnership to get to a solution rather than us put forward the idea. By the same token, we need to be able to develop enough of an agenda so we can stimulate people's thinking so that they want to participate. Because in the absence of that, if we go out with a blank sheet, it can be very hard for people to be able to think, well, what do you want? So we do need to give some sort of direction and scope around that thinking. I think the regional forums is going to be one way that we would hope is going to be able to be a way where we can have that interactive discussion about how the outputs from our research and how the policy changes can actually be implemented, because in the end it's the people in the regions that know how this works, and we need to be able to be a conduit between the different languages that the community speaks, that the research speak, that the policy makers speak, to be able to convert that into what makes a tangible change for the benefits of regional Australia. And I think, as I said to the last person who asked the question, this isn't going to be easy. It will be challenging for us. I hope that we can continue to work with communities, and I'd be the first to say, if you think we're doing it wrong, you've got to tell us, because the only way we're going to be able to make it better is if we know what we're not doing right so we can correct it. So I would certainly encourage you to tell us that, and I'll take that on board and look at what are some of the ways that we can facilitate, ways that we can get feedback from the communities on an ongoing basis so we know how we can have continuous improvement.
Thank you, Sue. Bearing in mind, Sue's not even in the job yet, so the tough questions are already started, Sue. It's going to be a long journey, I think, to get on and engage everyone in this, so we wish you well in your new role.